So the second chapter is the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, and Arjuna, having heard about the qualities that one should develop, how one should live one's life, Bhagavan Krishna answering his question, and his question was, how does a man of wisdom, an enlightened master, how can we recognize such a person? What are his characteristics? How does he speak? How does he sit? And how does he move about? So the characteristics are, how do we recognize? When he says, how does he talk? How does he deal with the world? How does he sit? He means, how is he established in the knowledge? And how does he move about? Is having established in the knowledge, then how is this person working in the world? So in our spiritual path, there are two qualities that are very, very important, Shama and Dama. Dama is control of the senses and Shama is control of the mind. So in the past few verses, we had seen that Bhagavan Sri Krishna shows that a wise person is the one who remains balanced among joys and sorrows, pain and, you know, discomfort. Success and failure remains balanced. And then in talking about Dhamma or control of the senses, Bhagavan gave a very beautiful example. Yada samharate chayam kurmogani vasarvasha indriyani indriyarthebhyah tasya prajna pratishthita. He says a wise person is one who can control his senses just as a turtle, when he perceives danger, withdraws his limbs and his head under his shell. So a wise person can withdraw his or her senses. When there is danger, when there is something that will take the senses outward, away from his wisdom, can withdraw the senses inward. And then last week, I think Pankaj talked about Vishaya Vini Vartante Niraharasya Dehina Rasavarjam Rasopyasya Param Drishtva Nivartate. So he says that even you might be able to control the sense organs, but the taste remains in the mind. The desire to... So that is where Shama comes in. Dhamma is control of the senses, Shama is control of the mind, because the desire still remains in the mind. Even though, okay, I don't indulge in shopping or buying or possessing or seeing things that are wrong or forbidden or listening to wrong things or gossip, I don't indulge, but the desire in the mind still remains. So how to control the mind, we'll talk about that today. So how to develop Shama or control of the mind. Dhamma, control of the senses, was already covered. So let us do verse number 61, which tells us how to control the mind. So having talked about the senses, Bhagavan says, verse number 61, chapter 2, Tani sarvani samyamya.
Tani sarvani samyamya.
Yukta asita matparaha.
Yukta asita matparaha.
Vashehi yasyendriyani.
Vashehi
tasya prajna pratishthita. So this sentence is repeated. Tasya prajna pratishthita. Such a person, pratishthita, is established in prajna. Prajna means wisdom. So who is this person established in the wisdom? So Bhagavan says, Tani, these sense organs, eyes, ears, nose, skin, tongue, which are running out to touch, possess, acquire, indulge, sarvani samyamya. Samyamya means control all of those senses. And yukta, yukta means attached to the higher. Asit, sit. How? Matparaha. Make me your goal, the Lord says. Make me your goal. Attach yourself to me and sit, having controlled the senses. And vashehi, and indeed, he means indeed. Vashe means one, yasya indriyani, one whose senses are under control. such a person is said to be established in wisdom. So control the senses, station them in me, make me your goal. And one whose senses are controlled is a man of wisdom. The moment we hear the word control, we don't like that. Rebel. Anybody says control? No. I do not want to be controlled. I live in a free country. Starting from teenagers, you know, you try to tell them something. No, I do not want to be controlled. And it goes on everywhere. We hear the word control, we get very negative. Why should I control? Why should I not enjoy life? Is life not meant to be enjoyed? And somebody sent me a message. I don't believe in spirituality. I believe in enjoying life. It's like saying that spiritual people are dull and boring people and they don't enjoy life. In fact, a truly spiritual person experiences the joy which is million times what you and I experience in the world. You know, when you talk to these enlightened masters, even million is not equivalent. They say the joy of experiencing the Lord's presence within, nothing on this world can equal that. Nothing in this world can even come close to that. It's a million and billion times much higher. If you talk to these enlightened masters, they may be sitting in the forest without just minimum clothes, hardly any food, but they are in their bliss. You cannot shake them from their bliss. So to think that spirituality is a boring is a totally misunderstanding. The reason is because all we have seen is worldly pleasures. And for us, this is important. Eat this, drink this, enjoy this, indulge this, possess this, acquire this. And if anybody tells us not to do it, then immediately we ask why. So there are three words which are very important: indulge, suppress, and sublimate. So one is indulge. And we know that indulgence is bad. Overeating, you know, one chocolate is good, and then second chocolate is okay, fourth chocolate is, you know, getting difficult, 10th chocolate, 20th chocolate, you give somebody 20 chocolates, say, no, I feel like sick, I feel like throwing up. And anything, indulging in any, you know, pleasures, you know, contact with the opposite sex. I mean, within the limit of the marriage, it's okay, but excessive indulgence or anything, excessive power, excessive shopping, excessive buying, excessive possessing, everything in excess is bad. So indulgence, we know, is wrong. And all the scriptures say that indulgence is not good. Then people say, then you mean I should suppress my desire? I have this desire to do this. I have a desire to contact this. I have a desire to possess this. You mean to tell me I should suppress it? And then what happens with suppression, it's like a spring. You know, you squeeze it, and then the moment you put your hand off, it gets released. So I may suppress one desire, like I may give up smoking, but then people who give up smoking take up overeating, or take up drinking, or take up gambling. So you have suppressed one desire, but then the mind is still racing. Mind is still active, so the mind runs and picks up another desire. And that's what happens, that suppression, all it does is create mental agitation. You know, I want to do it, but I can't do it. See, it's like you put somebody in jail. He wants to go out, he can't. So same way we feel, you know, I want to enjoy this pleasure, but I'm not able to do it. So suppression is, even Freud said that, besides not only our Vedanta, but even if you talk to Freud, of course, Freud then excessively believed in letting people enjoy whatever they wanted, but that's of course a different point. I'm not totally supporting his theories, but he said the same thing, that suppression is wrong. It causes a disturbance in the mental equanimity. So then what should we do? We cannot indulge, and you're saying don't suppress. So our scriptures say sublimate. What is sublimate? Sublimate is, through right understanding, my mind is running outside into the world of objects and wanting to possess. So the intellect says, no, that is not right. Why? Because the scriptures don't say it. And the energy that I am using at this moment in enjoying, possessing, acquiring, getting, fighting, you know, cheating others, that energy you direct in helping others, in serving the world, in making the world. You, the same energy can be channeled in a positive way instead of a negative way, and channel that energy in my spiritual growth, in my spiritual unfoldment. So whatever extra time I have, which I was spending in just, you know, going to bars or just uselessly on the internet, just Instagram, Facebook, how much time people waste, it surprises me. So much time, that much time you can spend in evolving yourself, in reaching God. So limit all this, because too much of wastage of time, and you know, limited amount of social media we need to. WhatsApp, oh my God, there is so much on there. And what essential things you do, yes, to keep in touch, but spending hours and hours on the phone or the computer is very wasteful. So channel that time in doing good. That is how you sublimate your desires. So the desires are not suppressed, they are sublimated. Another way somebody says is, use this negativity towards God. Like you are angry at somebody, instead of anger at somebody, turn your anger towards God. God, why don't you come and see me? Jealousy, you know, as I had talked even before, so you, instead of being a jealous of a person's wealth, you be jealous. Okay, he is meditating for half an hour, I'll meditate 1 hour. He's reading the Bhagavad Gita, I'll read Bhagavad Gita and Upanishads. So you can channel all your negative qualities in a positive direction. That is called sublimation. And why do we need to do that? So Gurudev says in his commentary that over these multiple lifetimes, we have accumulated so many vasanas by acquiring, possessing constantly, and chasing after objects. So these vasanas are not only of this lifetime, but of multiple lifetimes. And how are we to dissolve these vasanas? You say for spiritual growth, you have to reduce your vasanas to a minimum, reduce your desires. So as we have said before, with the body, you can serve the world and serve the Lord in the form of people. With the mind, I love God and I love all people. And with the intellect, I get the right knowledge about the world and about God. But all this effort still only will destroy part of your vasanas. So how do we destroy all of the vasanas? So Bhagavan says, mat paraha yukta, sit with me. So when he means yukta, what they mean in meditation. So in meditation, when your mind is still and your mind comes in contact with the Lord within, or you can even when you are very much involved in puja still you see a God as outside, you know, you see as Krishna or Shiva or Ganpati or whatever, but seeing the God within is the best technique is meditation. So in meditation, when my mind is still and I contact the Lord within, then in the heat of that meditation, Gurudev says, your vasanas get burnt. The vasanas get completely burnt. So turn the mind inward. That is the best way to destroy the vasanas. So here Bhagavan uses a technique of negation and assertion, which is always the best way to teach. And throughout the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord will use this technique where he says, don't do this, but do this. If I just keep saying, don't do, but what should I do? Like you go to a doctor and he says, you have this problem. Say you have a pneumonia or you have gastroenteritis or ulcer or whatever. Okay, you told me my disease, but now give me the medicine. He said, I don't have the medicine. For the medicine, you need to go down the street. So then why did I come to you? You know, you found the problem. Now you give me the solution. So here Bhagavan is giving us the problem, that excessive indulgence. And indulgence does not have to be physical. It can even be mental. So with my mind, I keep on thinking about the sense objects. I don't indulge, but I keep on thinking mentally about it. So even that, what it is doing is strengthening the vasanas. So even thinking about sense objects can only be reduced when I think about the Lord. Rasavarjam rasopyasya Param drishtva nivartate. He says, when you see the Lord within, then even the rasa, even the taste, even the desire for the sense objects goes away. Initially, you start by controlling the senses, but then you also have to control the mind. And in your meditation, in your prayer, you ask the Lord, oh Lord, please reveal yourself to me. Let me see you. Let me see you. Does not necessarily have to be, the Lord can be standing in front. Yes, that can happen in the Puranas, it say. But true revealing is to understand that Lord and I are one, and the Lord within me is the Lord everywhere. So then, even in this chair, you can see the Lord. Even in the wall, even in the tree, even in the bird, animal, plant, fish, humans, everywhere, when you see that divinity in, not only in living beings, but also in inanimate objects, that in the fan, in the chair, everything is the Lord. And then what you do is you develop reverence for everything and for everybody. So that is called revealing yourself. So here we have mostly talked about dhamma, controlling the senses, and controlling the mind. So somebody might say, why do I need to do shama? Why do I need to control the mind? As long as I'm not doing anything wrong, I'm not acquiring, possessing, cheating, and in my mind, if the desire is there, what's wrong? Why is it a problem? You know, we say even eradicate it from the mind, even the desire, first of all, the desire will make you do things. But why do I need shama? What is the need to eliminate the desire? So the next two verses, 62 and 63, talk about that. And then after we are done, then we'll try to have about 10-15 minutes for questions or comments. So the verse number 62 and 63, Gurudev calls as ladder of fall. See, in many places, Bhagavad Gita says how to rise, how to go higher. Here, the Bhagavad Gita is giving our story, how we fall down from our highest. So, this is called ladder of fall. So, we'll chant 62 and 63 together, and then I'll chant first, and then we'll chant together. Dhyayato Vishayan Punsaha. Sangaste Shupa Jayate. Sangat Sanjayate Kamaha. Kamat Krodho Bhijayate. Krodhat Bhavati Sammohaha. Sammohat Smriti Vibhramaha. Smriti Bhramshad Buddhi Nashaha. Buddhi Nashat Pranashyati. Very, very practical shlokas. In fact, Gandhiji in his commentary, in his autobiography, particularly mentions these two verses. He says these two verses are to be memorized and were very inspirational. If you read Gandhiji's autobiography, these two verses he has mentioned. So 62 and 63. Let's chant it together and then we'll do the commentary. Let's chant together. Dhyayato Vishayan Pumsaha Sangasteshu Pajayate Sangat Sanjayate Kamaha Kamat Krodho Vijayate Krodhat Bhavati Sammohaha Sammohat Smriti Vibhramaha Smriti Bhramshad Buddhi Nashaha Buddhi Nashat Pranashyati. Actually, Buddhi Nasho is the Sandhi, but when you chant it separately, it becomes Buddhi Nashaha. So dhyayato. So dhyayato means dhyayataha, thinking about vishayan, sense objects. So a person who is thinking about sense objects, punsaha means the human being, the person, thinking about sense objects, what happens? Sangha. Sangha means attachment, teshu upajayate. Upajayate means is created. So thinking about sense objects creates sangha, creates attachments, attachment to these objects, teshu. And with attachment, jayate kamaha. With attachment comes desire, burning desire. I must have it. And then when I don't get it, kamat, with desire, krodho abhijayate. Krodha, anger is created. So when I think about objects, I get attachment. When I get attached to objects, I get an intense desire to possess. And when I can't get it and somebody comes in my way, I develop anger towards that particular object, that is in the particular obstacle that is in my acquiring of the object, that prevents me from acquiring the object. Okay, then what happens with anger? As we all know, anger is very destructive, not only to others but also to me. So krodhat bhavati sammohaha. With anger, bhavati is created what? Sammoha, total delusion. Moha is delusion. Sammoha means total, complete delusion. The person becomes incapable of thinking. We know that when you get angry, you say things you normally would not do. You do things normally you would not do. And then afterwards you regret it. Why did I say that? You know, in my anger, why did I? And then you go around apologizing or you feel bad inside. So he says, with anger comes delusion, moha, and mohat, smriti vibramaha. Then this person becomes forgetful. Whatever he has studied, whatever he has learnt in the scriptures, all his past wisdom, his past knowledge, everything gets destroyed completely. Vibrama, complete destruction and forgetfulness. So all the wisdom, all the knowledge, all whatever his teachers have taught him, whatever the scriptures, not only scriptures, but whatever he has learned from childhood, whatever our parents have told us, when in anger you forget about it. Why? Because I have deluded. My thinking is wrong. Sammohat smriti vibramaha. So once the memory goes, the past wisdom goes, then buddhi nasha, then your ability to discriminate between right and wrong, between good and bad, nasha, totally gets destroyed. So your intellect, which is meant to discriminate, buddhi, which decides between right and wrong, nasha means gets destroyed. And then buddhi nashat pranashyati. And such a person who has no buddhi, who is not working with his or her intellect, he perishes. Perishes does not mean he die, but then he becomes like an animal. That's what Gurudev in his commentary says. He becomes a two-legged animal, just indulging without any discrimination, without any thinking. Actually, to call an animal is also an insult to the animal for such an end. Because animals at least live a life of control. They don't overeat. They don't overindulge. They, like a lion won't say, you know, I killed one deer, now let me kill three more deers and save them for tomorrow when I need them. No, he finishes his one deer and then he goes looking. But you and I, we keep accumulating. So we are, even to call animal to such people is an insult. So here I have just summarized the ladder of fall. How do we fall? First of all, starts by thinking. As we said, we need to control the thinking. Because thinking gives rise to attachment. Attachment gives rise to desire. So attachment means I must have. Without it, my life is incomplete. So the more we brood upon it, the more and more the desire becomes stronger. The more and more I must possess, I must possess, I must possess. And as the desire becomes stronger, then as we said, if I'm not able to get it, then I get angry. If I get it, we'll talk about that a little later. But if I don't get it, I get so angry, and then my mind is deluded. That's all I am thinking, morning to night, morning to night. How can I get it? Good or bad means I have to cheat somebody, I have to lie, I have to hurt, I must possess. And such a person gets deluded, and then he loses all his memory, all his wisdom, all the knowledge that the scriptures have given him. And then he does not discriminate between right and wrong. His intellect is, later on Bhagwan will say, buddhi nava evam ambasi. Just as vayu, just as a wind can take away a boat is going in one direction. A strong wind comes, it takes the boat away from its destination. So similarly, our intellect gets taken by the mind and by my senses away from its goal. And what is the goal? To reach God. It goes away from that, gets deluded, there's no discrimination, and such a person perishes. He becomes useless. So then all he's doing is becomes a beggar. He's begging the world for happiness. Give me a little happiness. Give me a little smile. Give me a little this. Give me a little that if I don't get it. So we become a beggar in the world, begging for happiness from people. Talking about beggar and about desire for money. So there was this beggar who stayed outside a temple. And he had been sitting there, and every morning, and then he would sit all day, and people came, they would, you know, some people would give him money, some people would not. But there was one man who felt very sorry for this beggar. So every day when he came to the temple, he gave 10 rupees to the beggar, every day. 10 rupees he'll give and go. So beggar was always used to look forward to this guy coming, you know, at least he'll give me 10 rupees. And so it so happened that the guy got married, the man. And so now his expenses increased because he had to also take care of his wife. So he reduced it from 10 rupees to 5 rupees. He said, okay, 5 rupees I'll give to the beggar because I need money to take care of my family. And then soon they had a child. So from 5 rupees, he reduced to 1 rupee. He would just give him 1 rupee and go inside the temple every day. So beggar said, you know, first you used to give me 10, then you reduced to 5, and then you reduced to 1. What happened? What is the reason? He said, sorry. You know, first I was single, so I used to give you 10. Then I got married, I had to reduce to 5. And now I have a child, so I had to reduce to 1. So beggar says, oh, so you are running your family on my money. He says, mere paise se apna ghar chala rahe. So that's what desire does, you know, it makes us do things that are wrong. And that's what happens when I have so much desire, so much anger, so much delusion, I lose my discrimination, then I even don't listen to the voice of conscience. See, conscience is the voice of the Lord within that constantly tell us, okay, this is right, this is wrong, do this, don't do this. You know, you should not, you should. But if we listen to the voice of conscience, then for a while, but if I stop listening, I say, shut up. You know, you always keep telling me, do this, don't do this. It's okay. One time is okay to have fun. And then second time, yesterday was good. Let's do it second time, third time. It can be anything. It can be any addiction. It can be an addiction to cigarettes, to coffee or tea, to alcohol, to money, to power, to possessions. Any strong desire makes us. We're not saying that one should not have fun or not enjoy life or not have possessions, but that should not be my only goal. And money especially is such a, one has to be so careful, because money, if it's a servant, it is good. I use money to make myself comfortable, and I use money to share. Money as a servant is good, but what we do, we make money as our master, that money is my only goal, is my only purpose. And one has to be very careful when dealing with money, because it takes over us, and then that becomes my only goal, how to possess more and acquire more and save more. And then when money is coming, I'm happy. And then stock market goes down 200 points, then I'm depressed. And, you know, people commit suicide when, you know, when they're buying on margin and all that. you know, people get severely depressed. So what is it that we have to watch out for is books and movies, because these are the things that can either lead us in the wrong direction or bring us to the right direction. So one has to be very careful what kind of movies I watch, what kind of books I read, what kind of shows I go to, because these are the things somebody was telling me. She just came back, she and her husband, from Jennifer Lopez, J-Lo's show. And she says that one of the dance, she says, I was asking my husband, why is she even wearing any clothes? She had practically nothing on. So, I mean, that's what happens, you know, when you go for such shows or what. And when they want to sell anything, that's the first thing they do. You know, they use the sexual attraction to sell. The moment that you see it on the billboard or you see it in the magazine. So they say be very careful about all the desires. I mean, not this is only one, but any overwhelming desire you have to be very careful about. And the point of the matter is that even very evolved saints or masters have to be very careful, because when the mind, you know, fissal jata hai, when the mind gets slipped from its height, you don't know when it happens and how it happens. And that's why Gurudev always said, be alert and vigilant. Be very alert. Live a life of alertness and vigilance. Because when the wrong tendency may come, not only but say I make a mistake and I steal something, or I take something I don't deserve, or do something illegal, or do something immoral, or I hurt somebody and then say something. So one has to be very vigilant so that I should not hurt anybody, I should not, you know. So there's a very beautiful story about Rishi Vaishampayan. I was hearing one of the commentaries of Swami Bodhatmananda ji. So Rishi Vaishampayan was a student of Ved Vyas ji. You know, Ved Vyas, who is the compiler of all the Vedas and who wrote the Bhagavad Gita. So Ved Vyas ji had the Upanishad, which was scattered all over, he had compiled them into four Vedas. All the Vedas, the teachings were, you know, scattered all over, hundreds of books and texts. So he made them into Rig, Sam, Yajur and Atharva Ved, four Vedas. And he organized them into three sections, mantras, brahmanas and Upanishads. So mantras are the praise of nature. Brahmanas are the rituals, all the rituals that the Pandits do, and Vedanta or the Upanishads is the highest knowledge. And so one time he had written a line that he says, Balvan Indriya Grama Vidvamsa Api Karshati. He says these sense organs are so powerful with these Balvan, that even a vidwan, even a wise person can be very easily attracted and distracted. So Vaishampayan, who was his student, his shishya, said, oh, that's not right. A wise person will not be disturbed by these sense organs. So he says, balvan indriya grama vidwan nasu karshati. So wise person who is truly established in wisdom will not be disturbed by sense organs. So this is wrong. So his guru's line he changed. So Ved Vyas ji was very calm. He didn't say anything. He said, that's what he thinks. Okay, he left it in there. He didn't change it. So a few days later, Vaishampayan, you know, all his students lived in small little huts, like small rooms, where there would be like a two section. One the front section and a back section, small huts like that, with a little wall, just so that to divide into kitchen and all that. So he was, Vaishampayan was living in this small hut, and it started raining heavily, pouring, you know how in India monsoon, heavy rain. And it was late at night, around 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock, and Vaishampayan Rishi was ready to go to bed. As he lay down, he heard a soft knock on the door. So he said, who is knocking at this hour? And in heavy rain, then the knock became a little louder. So he went and opened the door, and he saw a beautiful young girl dressed all in white, very pretty, sitting outside. And she was wet. You know, her clothes were wet from the rain, but partially wet. So he says, can I help you? She says, you know, it's raining so heavily. Outside the hut was a little shade. do you mind if I stay under the shade, you know, till the rain stops? He says, oh, sure. So he's standing in the shade. He closes the door and lies down. And the rain becomes even more heavier and heavier. And now she's completely drenched and she's cold and she's sneezing. And so he hears that and he thinks, you know, this poor girl, she's outside in the rain, completely drenched and sneezing, she'll get sick. So he opened the door. He said, you can come in, it's okay. But stay in the inside portion and I'll close the door. You stay in the inside, I'll stay in the outside. I'll close the door and when the rain stops, you can leave. I don't want you to get sick. So she says, thank you. So she goes inside, closes the door and lies down. Now this Rishi is thinking, because by now her clothes have been completely drenched and she was wearing white. So slowly he, you know, there's a conflict, you know, should I go, should I not go? And he's, you know, he can't sleep because in the eyes he sees, keep seeing that beautiful girl, you know, with white clothes and, you know, wet clothes and all. So he finally, you know, he can't resist. He opens the door and he goes inside and he bends down to just touch her. The moment he does, it was Ved Vyasji. He shows his true form. See, Ved Vyasji was an incarnation of the Lord. He could change his form just as Hanumanji, you know that. You know? Sukshma rupa dhari siyahi dikhava vikata rupa dhari lanka jarava bhima rupa dhari asura samhare. So he, Hanumanji, just as when he has to see Sitaji, he becomes as small as a mosquito. And then when he has to burn Lanka, he becomes huge. And when he has to destroy the demons, he becomes very powerful. So here Ved Vyasji had taken the form of a beautiful girl. And the moment he sees his guru, then he realizes, oh, what have I done? What a mistake I committed. And he immediately prostrates and apologizes. So Ved Vyasji was wanted to teach him that no matter how evolved, even a great rishi like Vaishampayan, who was so evolved, who was the direct disciple of Ved Vyasji, when the mind slips, we don't know. So that's what the message of this story was, that one has to be very careful. And the mind, as I said, can get disturbed by anger, by greed, by jealousy, all of which arises from desire. So have right desires. Instead of desiring the world, yes, we need some things to take care of ourselves, but instead of desiring the world, start desiring God. I want God. I want to know God. I want to reach God. I want God to reveal himself. Also, they say that when the desire is fulfilled, what happens to the desire that is fulfilled? It's not permanent. I fulfill this desire, then after a while, the desire arises again. As we said, when you indulge, all it does is increasing the desire. Swami Tejomayananda Ji, who has been the worldwide head of Chinmaya Mission for many years, and last year he gave up his position, he used to give a beautiful example. He says, like a box of Kleenex. You know, you pull one and what happens? The second one comes. You pull the second one, third one. So similarly, you satisfy one desire, other desire is ready. Satisfy that third one. It's never ending. So when the desire is fulfilled, temporarily my craving goes down. You know, like I want it. You know, like they say in a BMW. Mind wants. And then when the mind gets the BMW, temporarily it is satisfied. And then a desire for something else arises. Or my neighbor got a better BMW. So in 2-3 years, I feel I have to get a better one than him. So it is just a temporary, it could be anything. It could be sweets. I have to have cigarettes. So all it does is temporarily satisfies your craving, but then the craving comes back. And as we said, anger. Anger is not only from not fulfilling, but the example they give is again in marriage, in the beginning. Oh, you know, for you, I'll main chaand taare tod ke le aaunga, I'll bring the moon and the stars for you. And 10 lifetimes I want to live with you and all. And after a few years, even 10 weeks, how am I going to live? So that's what creates anger, you know, because I have to put up with this how many years. So that same person for whom I was ready to do anything now, so that's what happens. So slowly, slowly, the anger starts developing because things that I used to love and I used to write poetries about her, now the same thing irritates me. You know, why does she always... So in the same way, you know, it for men too, I'm sure everybody is laughing. I'm sure all of you have gone through this. So, so what used to be very attractive now creates anger. And that is again the same thing. That then something else you start liking, somebody else or something else. And that's what creates all the problems. And then there is, you know, divorce, or then there is a lawsuit because, you know, a boss and his secretary, and he gets attached to her, and then his wife is home, and then they end up with a lawsuit and millions of dollars the company has to pay, and then his wife leaves him. So all these problems develop because of wrong desires. And ultimately it leaves you with regret. You know, why did I do that? I shouldn't have done it. I knew it was wrong and I still did it. And then we end up accusing each other. You did this, you did that. So all the problems arise because of desire. And we are supposed to learn from our past mistakes. You know, they say always learn. If see, there are three kinds of people. The wise person is the one who learns from others' mistakes. He watched somebody else do it, then he won't repeat it. The second is the person who learns from his own mistakes. You know, I did this last time I did it, or last year I did it, so I shouldn't do it. So the wise person learns from others' mistakes. The manda, the slightly moderate person, learns from his own mistakes. And the totally dull person even does not learn from his own mistakes. He keeps on committing the same mistake. They say, last year you did the same thing. And why did you make the... Oh, Yarab, I don't know why I did it. So this such a person, even their own mistakes, they don't learn from. They just go around making the world miserable. You know, people who are angry or who are hostile or who are... they become so belligerent, they become so... You know, they make themselves miserable and they make their surroundings also miserable. So a person, that's why there's a Muniji who comes here periodically. He says, anger is so bad because it not only hurts the other person, it hurts you more. Anger hurts you more than anybody else. So his point was that do not get angry. The same situation can be handled by softly, by talking softly, by... In another place in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavan says speech should be satyam, priyam, and hitam. Satyam means it should be the truth. Hitam means it should be for the good of the other person. And priyam means it should be sweet. So our speech should be truthful, beneficial, and sweet. But a person in the middle of anger even fights with his own guru or with his own parents. Because then even the relationship of a guru and a shishya or a child and parents is such a divine relationship that one should always respect. But when this person is in anger, then he doesn't care who is in front of him, whether his teacher, whether his mother, whether his father, he is ready to humiliate and insult everybody, hurt everybody. And such a person, his life becomes miserable for him and miserable for the family. And what happens when the desire is satisfied? As we have said before, once the desire is satisfied, all it does is create more greed and create arrogance, like Ravana. You know, I can have anything I want. Nobody can stop me. And then the Lord, of course, himself had to come in the form of Rama. Even Ram's wife he kidnapped. Why? Because I am most powerful. Nobody can touch me. So when desires are fulfilled, it creates greed, it creates arrogance, it creates, you know, pride, and it creates jealousy for somebody who has more. So the desire not fulfilled creates anger. Desire fulfilled creates greed, jealousy, pride and all those things. So the point is that it should be controlled at the origin. It's like a ball. Say you're on the top of a hill and the ball slips from your hand. It's better to run quickly and catch it when it is just bouncing. But the moment it starts going faster and faster down the hill, then you can't even chase after it. You can't catch it and the ball is gone. So similarly, when the thought arises in the mind, catch it at that point. Because if you allow it to become attachment, desire, anger, delusion, then it is too late. It does not mean that, yeah, if you get the desire or you get some anger and you immediately become conscious, I shouldn't do it. It is still good. Wherever you catch it, it is good. But it is easier to catch it in the beginning, just as it is easier to catch the ball in the beginning, right at the level of thinking. Wrong thoughts, and don't let it become attachment, desire, anger, all of those, loss of memory, discrimination. So this is the essence of today's teaching, that control the senses, control the mind. And how do we control the mind? Not by suppression, but by directing it upwards towards the Lord, towards goodness. And this shows the ladder of fall, that by wrong thinking I get attached, by attachment I get overwhelming burning desire, and then anger, and then moha, delusion, where my thinking is messed up. And once that happens, I lose all my memory, all my wisdom that I had acquired, and I'm not able to discriminate between right and wrong, and such a person perishes, pranashyati. So these are very strong words Bhagavan uses. Normally in the Bhagavad Gita, he's very gentle. Very softly he tells Arjuna, you know, this is better, you should do it. If you, you know, don't do it. But here he's hammering the point, and Arjuna must have been shaken up, that what is the Lord saying, you know, how. But that is the, this is the biography of all of us. It's not only the biography, but we all are like that. Whatever it's, the question is, what are we attached to? So everything, everybody is attached to something or the other. Everybody has the strong desires. So the point is that my desire should be sattvic, should be noble, and it can happen when I have the right knowledge, which comes from the Bhagavad Gita and from listening to commentaries by Swami Chinmayananda. I think, I'm sure all of you have this. If you don't have it, please get it in the office, because Swamiji's commentary is very good. It's very clear. And so the idea is that either before you come, you should read the verses, or after you leave from here, read these three verses, 61, 62, 63 again, so that this knowledge becomes clear and becomes firm. And these points will be repeated again and again. So because we have these lifetimes of ignorance, so repeated listening is the only way to remove this ignorance and establish in the knowledge.
I have a question.
Sure.
You know, in our family, I have a 5-year-old, and when he was really young, we used to feed him and he would not eat, so we would put on TV, right? And then he would get engrossed in it and he would open his mouth. But you know, over years I've seen that addiction to TV has grown so much.
Right.
That if you turn off the TV while he's watching, he gets agitated.
Yes.
And it's addiction, and it's, how do you take them away? I mean, for kids it's really difficult. You can't teach these things to the
right,
kids.
Right, right.
As adults we know this, but to the kids, how do you wean them away from addiction?
Yes.
Like that?
So I think some wise person said, from 0 to 5 years, you love the child. From 5 to 10 years, you discipline the child. And after 10 years, say when he becomes a teenager, then you make the child your friend. So let the child be angry for a while. You can either tempt him, okay, we'll go somewhere, or let's do something, or I'll sit and play a game with you, or something he enjoys doing. Take him out to play, take him for a treat, okay, we'll go, you know. But slowly you have to, because this addiction to TV is very bad. And if nothing works, you just have to shut it off. And say, he will cry for few minutes. Kab tak roega, you know? Let him cry, it's okay. Because if we don't do that, then this becomes an addiction, like you said. So after up to 5 years you love, but after 5 years you have to discipline. And our problem is that we pamper the children and allow them to do whatever they want. Oh, I don't feel like going, so it's okay. Then, I mean, some kids, some parents tell us, oh, the child says it does not feel like going to Bal Vihar. I mean, not that, not because, you know, it affects us, but it's good for the child. Suppose to, on Monday the child says, I don't feel like going to school. You won't let him, unless he's sick, has 102 fever. He just has a little cold or something. I don't feel like, or he oversleeps. Do you let him do that? No, you say Monday morning, 8 o'clock, you have to be in school. So one has to not forcibly hitting the child or being, you know, violent, but some amount of discipline is required. Our parents, how did they treat us? Think about it. When we were growing up, were we allowed to do whatever we want? In India, no. Yahan pe kids, I don't feel like eating this. No, there was no choice. This is made, you have to eat it. Not, oh, I don't feel like eating, let me go get pizza for you. No, whatever is made, did we grow up spoiled like that? No. There was limit. I remember my mother used to say, you know, playing, after you come from school, this much time you play outside with your friends, and then you have to come and study. And I'm telling you, if I didn't have a strict mother, I would have never become a doctor. Because I love to play. I love to go out and have fun with my friends. She was so strict. I mean, you'll find very few strict mothers like that. And I give all the credit to her. If my mother was not strict with me, I would have probably been, you know, just an ordinary clerk or secretary or something. I'm not joking. I'm telling you the truth, because my instinct was to have fun constantly, even when I was little. And I used to hide from my parents. You know, all of us do that. But literally, she was not strict. And then also I gave her thanks because she took me to Swami Chinmayananda's lectures many times when I was a teenager. So we have to be strict with our kids. Otherwise, they won't be successful. You know, you want them to become successful in life. You want them to have good grades. You want them to have a good GPA. You have to just tell them, nay, it's not. You cannot watch. And how long will he cry? He will be mad for a while, kick his feet and all. Okay, let him. It's okay. It's not good for you. It's time to sleep. It's time to study. And then sit and read a book with him. Tell him, okay, let's sit and read and tell him some nice stories. And slowly he will learn.
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest. Buy some children's book from here.
Right.
Just open that in front of him while he's eating. Let's look at what this
book. Exactly.
And so his mind will be diverted to that instead of. I mean, it's a story, whether you watch it on TV or in a book.
Right.
The book is better than
right. Right. TV. Yeah, teach him to read. Right. And teach him to read.
I think you're right. I think our parents were very strict and they worked really hard on this.
Yeah, no, you're right. The parents, you don't have to be over strict, but you have to be strict.
I think as parents also, I think I'm not as disciplined as my parents were.
Yes. And that's how we spoil them. And if you want them to be successful, you have to be strict. Yes.
You know how you said that, like, after once they are teenager, you become their friend.
Right.
Right. But like when we know like they are doing wrong, like little kids watching TV, and now when they become teenager, they get addicted to their phone. So discipline them, or when you become strict with them, then they don't think they get against us. Then how do we make them friend? I mean,
I think the same way. First of all, it has to be an example. If you are addicted to your phone, then you can't expect the teenager not to be addicted. So I have to show by my example. Number one. Number two, you have to convince that person that, you know, that this is not good for you. If you don't get good grades, you won't get into a good college. You don't get a good college, you won't have a career. So you sit down and explain. And then if it absolutely happens, then again, they are disciplined. Yes, take away his car. Okay, you won't get a car unless you get your grades up. You know, if he's not studying and just wasting his time on the phone with friends, you know, you can use those things. You know, take away his privileges.
Right. A lot of times I feel like, you know, when you discipline teenager, sometimes the work doesn't get done unless you get angry.
Yes.
We just learned today, like, you know, how where the anger takes you.
Right.
So it sometimes conflicts, like, should I get angry or just let them do
right
the way, whatever they want?
No, I think they say that initially you talk to them, but if you use anger, it should be used like an instrument. Gurudev used to say when things were not done properly in the mission, he would go and find, he would get angry, but he said, I use anger. He says, I keep anger in my pocket. I can take it out and then put it back. That means even though outside he was getting angry, inside he was very peaceful, because sometimes people don't work. You know, people would not come on time, or sometimes they would say, Gurudev will do this and that will build the center by next year. And he comes and no work has been done. Nobody is doing fundraising. People are not doing. So as a last resort, if we have to use anger, it's okay. But anger should not disturb me inside. Inside, I should be calm. I can use anger as an instrument to fix the situation. But inside, A, I should be peaceful. Secondly, I should not drag it on. You know, keep on getting angry and keep on hurting the person. Yes, temporarily, if nothing else works. Yes, you may have to use anger.
Right.
What can you do?
If you don't get angry, the work doesn't get
yes,
done.
Yes. So, yes, if nothing else works, yeah, you can use anger as a tool. But inside, you should remain peaceful. And it is better to talk and resolve it by discussion rather than let it get to the anger point of anger or taking away privileges. But basically, kids want to have fun. You know, teenagers especially, they want to be with their friends, they don't want to study, they want to be on the phone or whatever. So see, because of our experience, we have seen the world and we have seen that what is right and what is wrong, what is good. And children or even teenagers live only in the present, what I'm going to enjoy right now. But we know that if I want to be successful, I have to give up pleasures now for success later.
So, you know, right now, like you just said, that now you realize that I won't become a doctor if my mom is not strict, right?
Right.
So what I feel like, if I become a strict, my daughter, she thinks like my mom is like, you know, doesn't want me to do the whatever I want, or restricting me to use
right.
the phone or the TV. And so I know that, like, once they get to the teenage life, it's the best way to parenting is like to become their friend. But it's hard. How do I make her friend
right.
when I have to discipline?
So I think it's a common, but it should done with love.
That's
hard. See, with love, I should do it with love. So same thing with my mother. I used to resent it. When I was not allowed to go to my friend's house, I love to spend the night at my friend anywhere else. Can I spend the night at my friend? And she would say no, you know, because you have to come home and study. Yes.
Method of reasoning works. Because they're an adult. You need to have a reasoning for that, and you need to be able to. When I used to argue with my father was a lawyer, and you know how lawyers argue, and we used to argue for hours with each other. So reasoning is the one thing that helps. They know that you're trying to understand them where they're
right.
coming from, and they know that you're directing them somewhere where they really should be going, or they want to go there. So ultimately, you're wanting to wish good for them. So reasoning works better than getting angry. The second thing is Gandhiji Satyagraha. I've done sometimes, I say, I won't eat until you correct yourself. That is, Gandhiji used to do that. And if, you know, they really feel bad, mom not eating today, oh my God, no, I can't do this. That's the last resort. The first is reasoning.
Right.
I have a question.
And then, I'm sorry.
I used to, you know, discipline my kids. I never did anything when there is a problem going on. I just let it go. 2-3 days later, when they are calm and quiet, take them out to dinner. When they are in a peaceful mind, after dinner, in the restaurant or some outside, then we explain everything. I told my son, if you don't go to school, and why do we need to read? Explaining everything, you'll be just like a bird, no house, nothing.
Hmm.
flying, no house or anything. And then even, you know, later on in life, and people always, it's just a competition, so much going on, this is the time you need to do. May look at dad or, you know, other people, just think about them and read, Google yourself. You like to do Googling and all that, see how they became like that.
Right.
And that's what I did. When they're calm and quiet, not like when there's a hangama going on in the house, they yell and scream at you, you're a bad mom. All kinds of, in anger, the kids talk. Oh, my friend's mom let me do whatever I want, and you don't let me do it, dad, and dad will tell, then you have to tell the husband in the house, you don't come in the middle, don't support anybody, this is me and her. When they support the kids, then you will be a loser, and they want that. They go to dad and
dad
talk.
Is usually
mom
the
mom becomes the maid in the house.
No, that's true.
You know, husband come over, what's going on in the house? I want some peace, we'll do whatever you want, just calm down. But that's not the issue here. The mom has to get control because you don't know the whole story. And and the dad, most of the time, they don't want to know the bottom of it. I mean, what's going on? Just stay away. You just have to tell, listen to your mom, whatever she says, I'm with mom. That's all
so the parents have
that's
to be united.
Mama, you tell whatever your mom says, that's all it is. You support the wife, don't support her. Otherwise, you will be the one crying.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, definitely.
I mean,
the unity. The parents have to be united. Yeah, because if one person is disciplining another one, especially grandparents, that's another thing. Grandparents in the house, that's another problem because they will spoil the child.
My in-law stayed with me for 20 years. I told my in-laws, especially my mother-in-law, because my son, he's just like my son. Yeah, it looks like my son used to do this. He's also doing like that. I said, I took her out, and when they went to school, I told them, if we had to live in the same roof, you support me or don't say anything. Otherwise,
yeah, that's true.
I made it very strict. Otherwise, we had to live in separate houses. I mean, I told, it's nothing to do with
that. Grandparents. Right.
And they take advantages out of us, and we are become the kids, they become the parent. They know how to manipulate, the parents. And especially in India, we don't have all the answers what the kids will tell, because we never asked our parents, why did you do this? Why did you do that? Why? We just have to listen. But here, not like that. In all of a sudden, when we are angry, I mean, I ran out of the things. Why we had to do puja today in the morning? Why can't I do it? Why I had to take a shower now after the puja? Blah, blah, blah. We never asked, and it's hard for us to come up with the answers.
Yeah, I think the world has changed. I think we have to change. And also the compromise. You know, I'll meet you halfway and you do this. So the negotiation, all those things, you have to use all those techniques. You know, wo Chanakya said, na, sam, dam, dand, bed. So do whatever it needs, you know.
She just said, like, if the kid asks question and they need answer for every question. Even sometimes you feel like, I don't know what to answer.
So Google it. Tell them, go Google. Now, Google is so good. In those days, we didn't have that. And I think, like I said, she said, giving example of people, you know, who are successful, and, you know, tell them that how, you know, if you want to go to this kind of college, or example of maybe an older brother or a friend or somebody who is very successful, have somebody else talk to them. Sometimes the parents not, but maybe an uncle or somebody whom they admire or they look up to, or a friend, or, you know, somebody, say a neighbor's child who has gone to a good college, you know, have, you know, things like that. So anything and everything has to be done, because we know what is right for the child, and the child at this age, they may not. But that's a common problem, because one time I read somewhere that one person said the children of today are so undisciplined and they don't listen to their elders. I don't know what will happen to them. You know who said that? A man in Egypt 2,500 years ago. He said exactly the same. The children of today don't listen and I don't know what will happen. So this is the story of every generation. We had the same problem. Our children do. It's ongoing. And same thing, you know, children, they realize, like our kids tell us, now mom, we realize when they have their own kids,
they realize what
we were going through. And they have to wake up in the night and give them the bottle and then clean the diaper.
Yeah.
And then they don't listen and discipline them and all. They are going through the same problems that we did. And now they realize सो ये दिस इज़ द लाइफ हमेशा की कहानी है. सो इट्स नथिंग चेंजेस, द वर्ल्ड इज ऑलवेज द सेम. इट्स लाइक दे से यू चेंज एंड यू कैन, यू हैव टू चेंज बाय एग्जांपल. यू कैन नॉट बी लेक्चरिंग द चाइल्ड नॉट टू यूज़ अ फोन व्हेन यू आर ऑन द फोन ऑल डे. यू आर वॉचिंग टी वी एंड टेलिंग द चाइल्ड नॉट टू वॉच टी वी. सो इट इट हैज़ टू बी डन बाय एग्जांपल.
Maybe the counselors do, you know, if you go and talk to the counselors in the school, different way of approaching the kid. Maybe you are telling not again, it's like a play and rewind. Mom is doing play and rewind, same thing over and over. So if you talk to, I mean, counselors, you know, good counselors, they tell different way.
And nowadays this phone is really a nuisance.
I know. No, it's all of us.
All this social media, oh my God.
No, we are all, we are all of us are. We cannot blame the children. We do the same. We don't put the phone down and it's so bad. And I sometimes catch myself, you know, why am I spending so much time on WhatsApp and also I just, because especially when I have to prepare on Friday and Saturday night, you know, this is kind of hard for me. Sometimes I say it's tough, you know, I'm sleepy at night. And then you have it, automatically you pick up the phone and then you have to tell yourself, no, shut the phone down.
Right.
This is something more important.
You have to set limit, otherwise
yes.
It goes on and on.
Yes, and we are all like that. So we have to start controlling ourselves before we can tell the children that.
You know, the world praises Steve Jobs for inventing smartphones.
Yeah.
But I say, you know, this is the worst invention of this generation.
But it had to happen. See, the smartphones have to come. Ultimately, everything is going to be in your phone. You're not going to have computer, nothing. You're not going to have a calendar, nothing. Everything is going to be in the phone. Your whole life will be in there. So it's a matter of developing self-control and just teaching. But thank you very much for this discussion. We'll see you next week. We'll do verse number 64 onward, where Bhagavan will tell us how having controlled the mind, what should we do? It's a very good verse coming up. So please think about this and read it on your own if you have this book. If not, please buy it from the office. It's only, I think, $25 or $27, all 18 chapters. $1.50 a chapter, I don't think it's a bad deal. So please read it and we'll see you next week.